This is a week for bagpipes, plaid, and kilts.
Like, they're all plaid.
This is an Open Championship Week edition of Primetime with Isaac and Sue.
Brought to you by Langdon Farms Golf Club, the best course in the Northwest for year-round golf. Book your tee time at langdonfarms.com.
Isaac and Sue on 1080.
Does checked mean plaid?
The Fan.
All right, welcome back. Hour two. Excuse me. 405, Robin Sue.
Spit on that thing.
Will Ortner is in today for Ryan Buckley, who is doing one of the hardest jobs in the world, home raising two children.
That's right. Sure, he's got one in front of a DVD player and the other one
baby.
In a crib.
So, Dabo Swinney, we're talking some college football.
Yeah, it's
collegiate football. Let's
go. They're fighting for clicks, we're fighting for wins.
Not that far off, I guess.
No.
You know? Yeah. Hmm? What, 6 weeks, maybe?
Yeah, right around the corner.
I don't think that's right around the corner. But
well, end of August.
It's not that far.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think we do get games in
Wins
August.
Around the corner. I define around the corner a couple weeks.
Yeah, we're not at a couple weeks. We're not there yet. But, you know, we had SEC media days. We've had the Big 12 media days. Big 10 media days are
next
coming
week.
Up next week. So
next big swag's going.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
I did. I was wondering, like, what they were going to do if they
the
were sending
the
show, but they're just sending swag.
Yeah, and swag's just going to put headsets on peeps.
Yeah, and just let's
where
go.
Where are they, Indy or something? Indianapolis?
Yes, I believe they are in Indianapolis.
So we may get some people for our show.
It's peeps.
Yeah, but hopefully not some random wide receiver from Michigan or something.
Oh, I'll take the wide receiver from Michigan. I don't want the random wide receiver from Indiana or the left tackle.
Isn't it the same? That's
from
the same
Maryland.
Thing?
No, it's not. It's the difference between Indiana and Maryland and Michigan.
I think it kind of is the same thing. I don't care about any of them.
Well, it's a valid point.
I would like to interview Ryan Day, though.
Yeah, me too. Can we ask him about his weird dyed beard?
See if he thinks being sick is a choice.
I'll bet you he does.
Compare him to Dan Lanning.
I bet you a lot of coaches think that way.
Dabo is back. I don't know what he's doing. I guess ACC Media Day is going on. I don't know.
I don't know when there's. Is that going on right now?
I just said I don't know.
Yeah, I got to look it up.
Why are you asking me that?
Yes. It does appear that one day ago the ACC Media Days did kick off.
Well, no one seems to care.
No, because it's the ACC. So.
Right.
Yeah.
But Dabo did make some headlines with some commentary, and I want to read that to you. Mm. I don't have the audio of it. But he said he anticipates the shift to an expanded playoff could lead to frequent in-season opt-outs from players or teams sitting their stars if a playoff berth is already locked up. He says, quote, you'll probably see some guys, if you're 4-4 and out of the playoffs, will probably head off to Arizona and train for the NFL. You'll see some situations like the NFL where if the Ravens are in the playoffs and have it locked up with one more game that really means nothing, do you play Lamar Jackson in that game? He says, maybe you're 11-0 and have a rivalry game, but you have your biggest foe the next week in a conference championship game, and if you win that game, you're going to get to the playoff and you're going to get a bye. Those are the things that you'll see play out all through college football.
Yeah, for once, I actually agree with him.
He has a point here.
Absolutely, he does. But I don't understand why this is such an awful thing for college football. This exists in every other sport. And so it coming to college football, people are like, oh, it's going to ruin college football. Well, it doesn't ruin the NBA. It doesn't ruin the NFL. It doesn't ruin Major League Baseball. Why does it ruin college football?
Well, can I mean, I don't think it's good for college football. I don't think it would ruin it. I don't think it's good when star players just start leaving. I mean, that's not a good thing for bowl games, as we've noted. But the retort to his comment there is that would players really opt out when they have so much money that they would be leaving on the table? Right? Like, you know, the best player, he's talking about the best players.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's say you're, who's a fringe playoff team this year? Maybe like Tennessee or something. Everybody thinks Tennessee's pretty good.
Sure.
But let's say Tennessee gets off to a bad start and their star quarterback gets hurt. And then now their star linebacker, who's like a first round pick in the NFL, he's like, well, maybe I'll, to Dabo's point is he's going to say, we're out of the college football playoff. We're not going to go there. We've lost too many games. We've lost our quarterback. So I'm just going to go train for the NFL. Well, is he going to give up his NIL? Is he going to give up all that money he got to play at Tennessee? Or is he going to stay and earn the dough?
I don't know how all that, like, because, you know, we're getting glimpses that the NIL payment comes in like quarterly chunks. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't think you can say one blanket thing. But,
no.
I mean, we have seen guys that have been hurt. Who was it? Jackson Smith and Jigba, I think, did this, where he got hurt, and then it was like, hey, I'm not coming back. He could have come back and played for Ohio State. And he's like, you know what? And that's Ohio State. I mean, that's a team that's in the national title conversation every year. And Jackson Smith and Jigba was like, nah, I'm going to get ready for the NFL. So we've already seen this. Again, like, NIL money is nice, but if you're a potential top five or top 10 pick, the most important thing to you should be getting to the NFL. We've already seen it in bowl games, right? We've already seen it, like Leonard Fournette did this. Christian McCaffrey did this. We've seen, think about it, the entire Florida State team did it last year.
Yeah, but I think one of the things that a lot of people in college football have been talking about with new NIL, expanded college football playoff, with just the changing landscape,
yeah.
One of the things they're talking about is they really need to try to incentivize players to stay.
Yes.
It does hurt when star players aren't out there. I mean, that's...
Well, but here's the thing. It may incentivize them because you are going to do revenue sharing now. There is some... We're not exactly sure how it's going to happen because the settlement still hasn't... The house settlement still hasn't come through. But eventually here, there's going to be like, what, $22 million shared amongst players. So... there will be paychecks that'll be missed. I'm assuming that is going to be a week-to-week thing, so you will be missing paychecks. Wouldn't shock me if NIL payments, again, are tied to quarterly performance, so you will leave some of that on the table.
Well, I also think another retort to Dabo is that, hey, even if you're 4-4, that doesn't necessarily mean you can't win your league and get in the playoff.
Yeah.
Like he's already
well, 4-4 probably does, but one or
not
two...
necessarily, because let's say you start. Oh, let's say your quarterback gets hurt, you lose your non-conference games.
Yeah.
You're only 0-1 in league.
That's true.
If you win your league, you get into that
tournament.
Depending on what league it is.
It's just that if you lose a couple league, like you're going to get three lost teams that get in. Four losses, it probably cuts you off at the knees. But yeah, I get.
But
where you're
get
going.
My point is
it's not
you can lose more games.
Yes.
And still have a shot at 100%. That thing and get hot at the end and get into that playoff.
And I don't believe that you will get a mass exodus. You may get the
you'll get one or two.
You get one or two. Let's say I'm trying to think. Like Ben Roethlisberger at Miami, Ohio, right? I can see Ben his senior year, and they're like, dude, you're a top 10 pick. And Ben is going through a rough year. Josh Allen at Wyoming. They weren't very good. I can see Josh Allen. Now let me ask you this. Is anyone jammed up that Josh Allen won't be playing his final seven games in Laramie? No one cares. But for the kids that are at Oregon, Ohio State, Michigan, there's just not going to be a mass exodus. It just isn't. You may get the one-off, but we love to do the doom and gloom. And as you said, you're going to have to find incentives. And you can do that through, again, revenue sharing. You can do it through, again, quarterly NIL payments. You can do it through bonuses, that it can be paid out for going to play in big games and conference championships and all that. You are going to have to incentivize it. There is a shift in college football that for the longest time in college basketball, we all know this. Dude, when I played college football, I tried to leave BYU after like a month because I was like, God, this place sucks. And they were like, cool, you're not going to be able to get a scholarship anyplace else. We can block where you want to go, and we're going to block any place you want to go, see the Pac-10, and we're going to hold your scholarship for a year, so you're going to walk on wherever you're at. So don't give me this whole thing of like, oh my God, what do we need? The players have some control. Dude, for the longest time, they had you by the nuts. And they did whatever the hell they wanted. And now players finally have a little bit of leverage where you can't just be the world's biggest jackass to a player, threaten him with all this crap because he's got options. And now that the field is tilted a little bit, and it's still in favor of all the coaches and in the institutions, but now that we're starting to see some equity, now all of a sudden that it's a terrible thing, I just get out of here. I'm not interested.
I do think, though, that you need some specific language. I mean, I don't know what happens with these NIL deals. Do these kids sign? Is there something that's in writing? Is it just,
yes,
hey, we're going to give you the...
Yes.
Okay, so in the writing, is there a specific language that you have to play a certain amount of games? Is there specific language
there
that...
There used to not be because the pay-for-play, but now that seemingly NIL is broken because the lawsuits, I do think that
there's got to be something.
There's got to be something.
Because the teams have to, I mean, they're giving out a lot of money. Yes. They have to protect themselves in some
way. My guess is that there is a certain level of being there. Once you're no longer on the team, that money ceases to exist. And they're not giving it to you all at once.
Right.
And so, we learned that with Damian Martinez.
So I don't know that. I don't know. Dabo, I see where he's going with that, but I'm not sure he's thinking that all the way through. I don't think anybody can predict what this is all going to look like is the point.
And this is another good one, too, right here. I like this. Vancouver Ford text line. Oregon's really going to throw the Washington game because they clinched? Please. And I do think there's an element of
I don't know about throw games, but I think he's saying rest in players for the big one the next week.
I do think that if Oregon and Washington are playing at the end and that game is meaningful, I do not believe you're going to see a mass exodus of players that sit. I just don't.
Okay, coming up next, Florida has the toughest schedule ever. 417 on the Fan.
Prime Time with Isaac and Sue.
Brought to you by Langdon Farms Golf Club.
On 1080 The Fan.
A little more college football here. I saw where David Cobb, the Cobber of CBS Sports, was talking about Florida's schedule, which we have discussed here multiple times. Mm-hmm. It is very difficult. As a matter of fact, I'm just going to pull it up and give it to you. I'm going to give it to you.
Please.
It is. Here's what Florida is facing this year. They will open against Miami.
Mm-hmm.
Then they play Samford. So there's a cupcake there.
Sure.
Then they host Texas A&M. They are at Mississippi. And then.
And Mississippi State, actually.
Oh, sorry, Mississippi State. And then Central Florida at home. Okay, those are their first five games.
Yeah.
Following that, they are at Tennessee. Versus Kentucky, versus Georgia, at Texas, versus LSU, versus Ole Miss, and at Florida State.
Yeah.
So one, two, three, four, I think five of those teams finished top 15 last year, if not six.
And Florida State's, Florida State, Ole Miss, LSU, Texas, Georgia, Tennessee, Miami, all highly ranked this year. Yes, statistically speaking, from last year in the preseason rankings, this could be considered the hardest schedule of all time. And the Florida football team is not necessarily great. I've listened to people say that, you know, it's a good team. There's some promise there, but it's no juggernaut. Billy Napier's fired. The only question about their schedule is when does he get fired? And that's like, if Georgia beats them, because, you know, that's obviously in Jacksonville. If Georgia beats them by 30, which is a real possibility, he will not be the coach when they play Texas.
So this guy, David Cobb, went through and looked and compared Florida's schedule to the toughest ever. Well, 21st century.
Yeah.
So not ever. But he said, any discussion over the toughest college football schedule of all time must begin with the 1899 Sewanee team.
Oh, my God. Can I? This stuff drives me crazy.
Have you ever heard of Sewanee?
No, and I don't care.
Well, you should care. They were an original member of the SEC. And, well, I don't know about the SEC as it was called then. I think then it was called the Southern Conference. Mm-hmm. And they won five road games in 6 days against Texas, Texas A&M, Tulane, who was big then, LSU, and Ole Miss.
All you need to know is that they played five games in 6 days, which means
in a week
it's not football.
Beat that! And by the way, that is now no longer called Sewanee.
Yeah.
It is called the University of the South.
Cool.
You couldn't be any more unimpressed.
No.
It is in Sewanee, Tennessee.
I hate when people try to reference that. That's like saying in baseball, like when we're talking about like pitch counts or whatever, and you're like, well, see old three-finger Mordecai Brown back in 1914 threw 9,000 innings and his arm didn't fall off. Cool, dude.
Well, dude, 9,000 innings, a lot of innings.
He threw 11 miles an hour. That's great. And
well,
like,
I'm impressed.
Yeah, I am not.
Sewanee had just 21 players.
Why do people write articles like this?
Well, I think that's kind of interesting. But then he says, what about in modern times? While there the 1899 Sewanee run will never be replicated, Florida's 2024 slate is shaping up to be the toughest of the 21st century. The Gators will face 11 power conference opponents, including eight featured in Dennis Dodd's post-spring top 25, opening the season against Miami.
Yeah. So I looked here with ESPN's just their ranking. So Georgia was number one. Texas was number three. Scrolling. Ole Miss is number six. There was a couple others on there. Florida State 11, LSU 14, Tennessee 15. Miami's in here. Miami is 24th. And then also receiving votes, so in the top 30, would be Texas A&M, Kentucky, which they also have to play.
Yeah, so he says, the criteria for assessing a schedule's difficulty are endless, and comparing the difficulty of slates from different seasons and eras is difficult. But after combing through the data, here is how Florida's 2024 slate shapes up against the toughest schedules of the 21st century. Number six, they have 2002 USC. Mm-hmm. If you count Notre Dame, each opponent on their schedule was a power conference foe. Eight of the Trojans' 12 opponents were ranked at the time of the game, and five of them finished in the top 20.
It's pretty good.
All but one opponent, which was Stanford, finished with a winning record. Wow.
Yeah, that's brutal. What was USC's record, by the way?
11-2. All right. Won the Orange Bowl.
All right. But not a national championship.
Well, that was early in Pete Carroll's tenure.
Lame. See, but that's kind of the cool thing in this modern day. That USC team, which may have been the best in the country because you still want 11-2 in that schedule, you get a chance at the big dance.
2014 Arkansas. Hmm. They went.
They did not go 11-2.
6-6.
Yeah, I was going to say that's more likely.
But six of their 12 opponents were ranked in the top 10 at kickoff. How about that?
That's not good. You don't want that.
2017 Maryland. Not only did they begin the season on the road against Texas, but they also welcomed UCF to town in week four. It was the year where the Knights finished 13-0. In addition to those non-conference games, Maryland played at Wisconsin, at Ohio State. Then its final three in the 4-8 season were against Michigan, Michigan State, and Penn State, all ranked. Six of Maryland's opponents finished among the top 17 in the final eight people. Number three, 2019 Auburn. Now, this is where Oregon comes into play. Mm-hmm. That was the team that played Oregon at the start of the season. That was the Bo Nix team.
The Bo Nix, right? Yeah. First start?
Yeah. It says, this schedule has its share of gimmies since the Mississippi schools in Arkansas were all down, but the top end was ridiculous. The Tigers played five of the top eight teams in the final AP poll.
The Tigers? You said it was Auburn. Oh, I don't know why I was thinking. I was thinking War Eagle. Sorry. Apologies.
You're doing great.
Well, I don't know. The Auburn thing sometimes throws me off. I was like, Tigers? I was like, oh, yeah, they are the Tigers.
So they beat Oregon.
The War Eagle thing, like, it just...
It's like Beaver Stadium, but they're the Nittany Lions.
Yeah, threw me off.
They beat Alabama. Beat Ole Miss. The second toughest schedule is the 2011 LSU, also Tigers.
Yes, that does not have an eagle as a mascot. They actually have a Mike the Tiger.
They beat three of the top five teams in the final AP poll during the course of a dominant regular season. This was the Joe Burrow year.
Some people,
or not Joe Burrow. What's his nuts? I'll get it in a second. Though the campaign ultimately ended in defeat against Alabama in the BCS championship game, the Bayou Bengals, see, they're not the Tigers, they're the Bengals.
Oh, okay.
Navigated a tricky slate. Of their 12 regular season games, seven came against teams ranked. Only two were against non-power conference teams, and the Tigers had just six home games. And they also played Oregon that year.
What year was that?
2011.
That's the Honey Badger year where he's almost the Heisman.
Who was their quarterback?
It's on the tip of my tongue.
I gotta look it up.
What's his nuts?
He wasn't very good.
Jarrett Lee? Or, yeah. Looks like a Jordan, or and they had Jordan Flynn? Jefferson as well.
Yeah, Jefferson. That's the guy I was thinking of.
Yeah, and he, I guess he played the final five games. So it was Jarrett Lee, and then they had old Zach Mettenberger, but he didn't play. He was young. Yeah, not exactly a murderer's row there.
So this, and then Florida is the number one hardest schedule of the 21st century. He says, while Samford should be a gimme in week two, you can't comfortably circle any other game. Even though Mississippi State is rebuilding, it's still an SEC road game. Though unranked by Dodd, Kentucky and UCF are also quality opponents. And as you said, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 8 will be ranked, and three will be in the top 10.
Yeah.
Actually, four top 10 teams. They will play four top 10 teams in a row.
Yeah.
Georgia, Texas, LSU, and Ole Miss, at least top 10 right now.
Yeah, they will not, Billy Napier will not be the head coach. Bare minimum November 16th. He will not get through the stretch of Tennessee, Kentucky, Georgia, Texas. By the time they play LSU, on November 16th, he will be fired. He's done.
So it's official. Florida has the toughest schedule ever, except for Sewanee. The gauntlet that they ran in a week with 21 guys and no water.
How weird is that if you're Billy Napier knowing, coaches know. You want to talk about a dead man walking. Do you just want to get it over early to just end your misery? Just get blown out by A&M and get fired. That way you don't have to go through the humiliation.
Lace them up.
Of getting your ass kicked.
It's Division I football!
You never know.
Dude, if they lose to Miami right out of the gate, just get hammered by A&M and just go to them and be like, dude, you're going to fire me anyway. It's just tell your guys, dude, just lose as bad as possible so that I can get out of here and collect my unemployment.
All right, ITN is next. How did the graffiti cleanup go? I have an update. Mm. And Primetime Yellowstone, we will redefine a dip in the hot tub. But first, Will with SportsCenter.
This is an Open Championship Week edition of Primetime with Isaac and Sue.
Brought to you by Langdon Farms Golf Club.
On 1080 The Fan.
Ah! All right, pleased to have you along. Cruising. It's Tuesday. It is now July 16th. Can you believe that's July 16th already? Can you believe that?
I can.
Why?
Because I'm looking down at my computer and it says July 16th.
Yeah. Very believable.
Yeah. And July 4th was quite some time ago.
July 16th, 2024, is time for In the News. I'm your noted newsman. Hello. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you. Please be seated, ladies, gentlemen. I regret to inform you that today is World Snake Day.
Oh, yeah, that's
why. Snakes need their own day.
I don't know why, but on MSN, they had a celebrity with snakes gallery, and I was like, what?
Celebrity with snake? What do you mean?
It was just it was a bunch of photos. It was a gallery of celebrities with snakes around them. And I was like, why is that? Well, I guess it's National Snake Day.
Yeah.
I got no time for that, Rob.
I don't either. I hate snakes, but they do probably deserve their own day.
Do they?
Everything else does.
Yeah. I have nothing necessarily against snakes, but I want nothing to do with them. I just, snake, go over there, I'll stay over here, and we just, don't encounter each other. I have no reason for a snake to be in my life. How about that?
It is also National Fresh Spinach Day.
Okay, not bad.
You like spinach?
If I'm going to do a salad, I do like it to be on fresh spinach.
Yeah, me too. It's healthy.
You can throw that into some fajitas, too, a little cooked spinach, or a nice... gyro,
get spinach those 5 times a week. It's great with chicken.
You got those big forearms like Popeye?
Yeah, trying to.
Yeah, I forgot. Yeah, he was that.
Remember
old.
That as kids? Now, Will, you're too young, but when we were kids,
I know Popeye.
Well, I know, but you probably didn't watch Popeye, did you?
Probably not.
Yeah, you know of Popeye, but Popeye was a big deal in our world.
Yeah,
because Popeye, he would pound spinach and then he would grow big muscles.
Yeah,
but. The word on the street in the schools was always that spinach is awful.
Yeah.
You don't want spinach, but Popeye ate it and you got strong, so therefore you would eat spinach.
Yeah, I would definitely say that the whole spinach has a bad rap growing up. No one wanted to eat spinach. And it was
kids didn't want to eat vegetables, but for some reason spinach was considered the worst of all of them.
Yeah.
And it's no different.
And what is the, I'm Popeye the Sailor Man, I'm strong to the finish because I eat my spinach, something like that. He sang a song.
Yeah, I know.
I'm Popeye the Sailor Man.
I eat from a garbage can. No?
I want to say he's strong to something, and finish kind of fits.
I'm Popeye the Sailor Man.
But I'm probably wrong about that. He's something strong because he eats his spinach. I eat my spinach.
Strong to the finish.
Finish?
It's F-I-N-I-C-H. That's what I'm going to say. Because I eats me spinach. I'm Popeye the Sailor Man.
He was kind of an idiot, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was.
Popeye.
And let me just say this. Olive oil? Man, what are we doing, Popeye?
Right. There's better.
Yeah, way better. All right, well, go spinach, I guess. Better than snakes.
How did the graffiti cleanup go, you ask?
Please.
We closed down 84.
Yeah.
This weekend.
That was a pain in the ass.
Was it?
It was.
Didn't affect me, but it probably did affect you.
It did affect me, and it was a pain in the ass. But, you know, I want the cleanup to go well, so.
Well, they did clean it up.
Now, can we keep it cleaned up, and how much did they clean up?
Taggers have already paid a visit.
Oh, for God's sakes.
To I-84 after crews closed a five-mile stretch of the highway for graffiti removal over the weekend. Multiple state and local agencies worked together to clear graffiti, remove trash along the corridor between I-5 and 205 late Saturday night through Sunday morning. Tina Kotek was out there.
Mm-hmm. Said she wanted to do, I saw a thing where she wants to restore the image of a once clean city. Which
yes.
is great.
Well, that is great, but she's just trying to do the parts where people drive from the airport.
Yeah, that's true. No, that's fine.
But that's a good start.
Well, can we actually just start making graffiti a serious crime? Why is that such a novel concept? Like, hey, we're telling you not to do it. We're getting serious about it. And if you do, we're going to kick you in the junk. I'm a jackass. Like, we close 84. We spend millions of dollars. And already there's one D-bag out there like, I'm going to spray paint my name.
Yeah, they were funded by $20 million from the state. Oregon Bureau of Transportation spokesman Don Hamilton said the Bureau always expects graffiti to return, though the work this weekend pushed the problem in the right direction.
$20 million bucks.
I think those taggers are pretty elusive. I've seen some stories on them.
Yeah.
And they're not that easy to nab.
No.
Is the thing. Mm. Because, you know, the cops.
Yeah. They're busy with other things. Some of the stuff that they do, like...
They're spread thin.
It kind of... I often wonder how they get up there. Some of that graffiti is in places that I think
fascinated.
They fly. Yeah, little jetpacks. They witches. And can we do something about that fireplace? That fireplace building along 84, Gordon's Fireplace. You want to talk about an eyesore for the city?
Where's that? What are you talking about?
It's over kind of by Lloyd Center when you're going on 84, and there's a huge. I think it's called Gordon's Fireplace, and it's this giant like brick building. It's been there forever. And it's like six stories high. You can't miss it. Every window has been broken out. And it is just... I have watched over the years that thing just become a kaleidoscope of just crappy spray paint. It almost looks now like the Seattle gum wall. But in a giant, like, 6 to 8 story building. Hmm. And I think it's like Gordon's Fireplace.
It's a dump. I drive by it every once in a while.
Right? Can we just blow that thing up?
Come on, Gordon.
I mean, what are we doing?
Five people were able to escape a hot, acidic pond in Yellowstone National Park.
Well, that's good.
After their SUV went off the road and into an inactive geyser.
Ooh, boy, you want to talk about the scariest thing you can have? I give you that.
The passengers were able to get out of the water on their own after the crash.
How was the water?
They were taken to the hospital for treatment of non-life-threatening injuries. They said it was 105.
Oh.
So that's a little, just a little north of a hot tub.
Yeah. The other day when it was like 100 and whatever, we had a couple days of that. And then one morning I went to get in my hot tub. My back is kind of flaring up. I went to get in the hot tub and I put my foot in. Oh, my God. The hot tub was at 111 degrees because it had been broiling in the sun. Because hot tubs stop at 104. Like, you can't set your hot tub for hotter than 104. Let me tell you something. You put your foot in 111-degree water, you get that ass out real, real fast. So 105 is hot, but...
Survivable.
You're not going to burn. I mean, again, you can set your hot tub to 104. It's uncomfortable, but you're not.
Is that the highest?
Yeah, there's a limit. I think on all U.S. hot tubs, the most you can set it to is 104.
We have measles in Multnomah County. This comes up every once in a while.
Yeah, it's because, you know, apparently vaccines now are the devil.
Yes, at least one measles case in an unvaccinated child has been reported in Multco. The child and their family had recently spent time abroad in a country where measles is common.
Yeah, way to go. So you were going to a measles country and you thought, what the hell, I'll just not vaccinate my child. Cool.
They have since been taken to receive care in a healthcare setting while infectious. Mm. That's a weird statement.
It is a little weird.
Additional cases among unvaccinated individuals within the child's household are expected.
Isn't it amazing that we fought so hard to eradicate polio and measles and smallpox, and now we're like, yeah, vaccines are terrible. It's awful. We don't need any of those.
Well, I'm not like that. Speak for yourself.
Went for antibiotics. People would be like, no, I don't need no antibiotics. Give me the MRSA. Cool.
They do not expect community spread will occur because most people are vaccinated.
Yes. Let's hope so.
Do you trust airlines with your dog?
Oh, no. No. That would have to be an emergency sort of situation.
That story next. It is 4:43 on The Fan.
Informs Golf Club.
On 1080 The Fan.
I just had a Tootsie Roll for the first time in a long time. How do you feel about that?
Every now and then, like, we've got a bag of the worst candy. I don't know who's in charge of the candy budget, but I don't even know where you buy that candy. But someone bought an entire bowl of tiny Tootsie Rolls and then non-branded, just generic suckers.
Yeah.
Like, I honestly don't know where you would go to buy that candy. Dollar Tree? Or
the only thing worse is that bowl of mints in Ryan Cooley's office.
Yeah.
He buys those little mints that are...
There's white.
They're just white, yep, with a hole in the middle.
Yep. Again, non-branded.
Like, Lifesavers.
They're not Lifesavers.
I don't know. They're the off...
They're the most generic, awful things ever.
It's like when you show up at, like, your grandma's house and she has a bowl of, like, the strawberry candies or, like, the random butterscotch, and you're like, I don't even know, like... Is that a Winco thing?
See, I don't like those butterscotches.
You're like, whoa.
Yeah, take it easy on the butterscotch.
Grandpa Gary Ortner used to hide it like you would if you were going to give money to like a waiter so you can get a better spot in the restaurant. He used to hide the butterscotches so he'd shake your hand and give you the Werther's.
Now, Werther's is not a butterscotch. That's
what?
A
Werther's. But first, Will with SportsCenter.
This is an Open Championship Week edition of Primetime with Isaac and Sue.
Brought to you by Langdon Farms Golf Club.
On 1080 The Fan.
All right, pleased to have you along. Cruising. It's Tuesday. It is now July 16th. Can you believe that? It's July 16th already? Can you believe that?
I can.
Why?
Because I'm looking down at my computer and it says July 16th.
Yeah. Very believable.
Yeah. And July 4th was quite some time ago.
July 16, 2024, it's time for In the News! I'm your noted newsman. Hello, thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you. Please be seated, ladies. Gentlemen, I regret to inform you that today is World Snake Day.
Oh, yeah, that's
why. Snakes need their own day.
I don't know why, but on, like, MSN, they had a Celebrity with Snakes gallery, and I was like, what?
Celebrity with Snake? What do you mean?
It was just, like, it was a bunch of photos. It was a gallery of celebrities, like, with snakes around them. And I was like, why is that? Well, I guess it's National Snake Day.
Yeah.
I got no time for that, Rob.
I don't either. I hate snakes. But they do probably deserve their own day.
Do they?
Everything else does.
Yeah. I have nothing necessarily against snakes, but I want nothing to do with them. I just, snake, go over there. I'll stay over here, and we just, don't encounter each other. I have no reason for a snake to be in my life. How about that?
It is also National Fresh Spinach Day.
Okay, not bad.
You like spinach?
If I'm going to do a salad, I do like it to be on fresh spinach.
Yeah, me too. It's healthy.
You can throw that into some fajitas too, a little cooked spinach or like a nice gyro,
Get spinach those like five times a week. It's great with chicken.
You got those big forearms like Popeye?
Yeah, trying to.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. Yeah, he was that
Remember
old.
That? As kids, now, Will, you're too young, but when we were kids.
I know Popeye.
Well, I know, but you probably didn't watch Popeye, did you?
Probably not.
Yeah. You know of Popeye, but Popeye was a big deal in our world.
Yeah.
Because Popeye, he would pound spinach and then he would grow big muscles.
Yeah.
But the word on the street in the schools was always that spinach is awful.
Yeah.
You don't want spinach, but Popeye ate it and you got strong, so therefore you would eat spinach.
Yeah, I would definitely say that the whole spinach has a bad rap growing up. Like, no one wanted to eat spinach. And it was like,
Well, kids didn't want to eat vegetables, but for some reason, spinach was considered the worst of all of them.
Yeah.
And it's no different.
And what is the, it was like, I'm Popeye the Sailor Man, I'm strong to the finish because I eat my spinach, something like that. He sang a song.
Yeah, I know.
I'm Popeye the Sailor Man.
I eat from a garbage can. No?
I want to say he's strong to something, and finish kind of fits.
I'm Popeye the Sailor Man.
But I'm probably wrong about that. He's something strong because he eats his spinach. I eat my spinach.
Strong to the finish.
Finish?
It's F-I-N-I-C-H. That's what I'm going to say. Because I eats me spinach. I'm Popeye the Sailor
He was
Man.
Kind of an idiot, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was.
Popeye.
And let me just say this. Olive oil? Man, what are we doing, Popeye?
Right.
You know, just,
there's better.
Yeah, way better. All right, well, go spinach, I guess. Better than snakes.
How did the graffiti cleanup go, you ask?
Please.
You know, we closed down 84.
Yeah.
This weekend.
That was a pain in the ass.
Was it?
It was. It
didn't affect me, but it probably did affect you.
It did affect me, and it was a pain in the ass. But, you know, I want the cleanup to go well, so.
Well, they did clean it up.
Now, can we keep it cleaned up, and how much did they clean up?
Taggers have already paid a visit.
Oh, for God's sakes.
To I-84 after crews closed a five-mile stretch of the highway for graffiti removal over the weekend. Multiple state and local agencies worked together to clear graffiti, remove trash along the corridor between I-5 and 205 late Saturday night through Sunday morning. Tina Kotek was out there.
Mm-hmm. Said she wanted to do, I saw a thing where she wants to restore the image of a once clean city. Which
yes.
is great.
Well, that is great, but she's just trying to do the parts where people drive from the airport.
Yeah, that's true. Well, that's fine.
But that's a good start.
Well, can we actually just start making graffiti a serious crime? Why is that such a novel concept? Like, hey, we're telling you not to do it. We're getting serious about it. And if you do, we're going to kick you in the junk. I'm a jackass. Like, we close 84. We spend millions of dollars. And already there's one D-bag out there like, I'm going to spray paint my name.
Yeah, they were funded by $20 million from the state. Oregon Bureau of Transportation spokesman Don Hamilton said the Bureau always expects graffiti to return, though the work this weekend pushed the problem in the right direction.
$20 million.
I think those taggers are pretty elusive. I've seen some stories on them.
Yeah.
And they're not that easy to nab.
No.
Is the thing. Mm. Because, you know, the cops.
Yeah. They're busy with other things. Some of the stuff that they do, like,
they're spread thin.
It kind of, I often wonder how they get up there. Some of that graffiti is in places that I think
fascinated.
They fly. Yeah, little jetpacks. They witches. And can we do something about that fireplace? That fireplace building along 84, Gordon's fireplace. You want to talk about an eyesore for the city?
Where's that? What are you talking about?
It's over kind of by Lloyd Center when you're going on 84, and there's a huge. I think it's called Gordon's fireplace, and it's this giant like brick building. It's been there forever. And it's like six stories high. You can't miss it. Every window has been broken out. And it is just, I have watched over the years that thing just become a kaleidoscope of just crappy spray paint. It almost looks now like the Seattle gum wall, but in a giant like 6 to 8 story building. Hmm. And it's like, I think it's like Gordon's fireplace.
It's a dump. I drive by it every once in a while.
Right? Can we just blow that thing up?
Come on, Gordon.
I mean, what are we doing?
Five people were able to escape a hot, acidic pond in Yellowstone National Park.
Well, that's good.
After their SUV went off the road and into an inactive geyser.
Ooh, boy, you want to talk about the scariest thing you can have? I'd give you that.
The passengers were able to get out of the water on their own after the crash.
How was the water?
They were taken to the hospital for treatment of non-life-threatening injuries. They said it was 105.
Oh.
So that's a little, just a little north of a hot tub.
Yeah. The other day when it was like 100 and whatever, we had a couple days of that. And then one morning I went to get in my hot tub. My back is kind of flaring up. I went to get in the hot tub and I put my foot in. Oh my God. The hot tub was at 111 degrees because it had been broiling in the sun. Because hot tubs stop at 104. Like, you can't set your hot tub for hotter than 104. Let me tell you something. You put your foot in 111 degree water, you get that ass out real, real fast. So 105 is hot, but
you're survivable.
You're not going to burn. I mean, again, you can set your hot tub to 104. It's uncomfortable, but you're not.
Is that the highest?
Yeah, there's a limit. I think on all U.S. hot tubs, the most you can set it to is 104.
We have measles in Multnomah County. This comes up every once in a while.
Yeah, it's because, you know, apparently vaccines now are the devil.
Yes, at least one measles case in an unvaccinated child has been reported in Multco. The child and their family had recently spent time abroad in a country where measles is common.
Yeah, way to go. So you were going to a measles country and you thought, what the hell, I'll just not vaccinate my child. Cool.
They have since been taken to receive care in a healthcare setting while infectious. Mm. That's a weird statement.
It is a little weird.
Additional cases among unvaccinated individuals within the child's household are expected.
Isn't it amazing that we fought so hard to eradicate polio and measles and smallpox, and now we're like, yeah, vaccines are terrible. It's awful. We don't need any of those.
Well, I'm not like that. Speak for yourself.
Went for antibiotics. People would be like, no, I don't need no antibiotics. Give me the MRSA. Cool.
They do not expect community spread will occur because most people are vaccinated.
Yes. Let's hope so.
Do you trust airlines with your dog?
Oh, no. No. That would have to be an emergency sort of situation.
That story next. It is 4:43 on The Fan.
Farms Golf Club.
On 1080 The Fan.
I just had a Tootsie Roll for the first time in a long time. How do you feel about that?
Every now and then, like, we've got a bag of the worst candy. I don't know who's in charge of the candy budget, but I don't even know where you buy that candy. But someone bought an entire bowl of tiny Tootsie Rolls and then non-branded, just generic suckers.
Yeah.
Like, I honestly don't know where you would go to buy that candy. Dollar Tree? Or?
The only thing worse is that bowl of mints in Ryan Cooley's office.
Yeah.
He buys those little mints that are...
There's white.
They're just white, yep, with a hole in the middle.
Yep. Again, non-branded.
Like, Lifesavers.
They're not Lifesavers.
I don't know. They're the off...
They're the most generic,
yeah,
awful things ever.
It's like when you show up at, like, your grandma's house and she has a bowl of, like, the strawberry candies or, like, the random butterscotch, and you're like, I don't even know, like, is that a Winco thing?
See, I don't like those butterscotches.
You're like, whoa.
Yeah, take it easy on the butterscotch.
Grandpa Gary Ortner used to hide it like you would if you were going to give money to, like, a waiter so you can get a better spot in the restaurant. He used to hide the butterscotches so he'd shake your hand and give you the Werther's.
Now, Werther's is not a butterscotch. That's what? A Werther's original. You're not, and we're talking about the bastard, non-branded, just... Again, it's weird that there's no branding. It's just we all know what we're... It's just like that
weird...
It's just
weird, in a yellow wrapper.
Yellow wrapper. It's just butterscotch.
Well, anyway, I enjoyed the Tootsie Roll. Right. I hadn't had one in a long time.
Yeah, I don't eat... You know, you don't really encounter the Tootsie Roll very often.
No. This is in the news, July 16, 2024. Would you trust your dog at the airport?
Having seen and worked at an airport myself, that would be an emergency, have no other option. I'm not putting my dog on an airport.
If you are flying, so these people, this is an Oregon family, mm-hmm, and they were moving.
Yeah.
And so I think they kind of had to fly their dog.
Well, you can always drive it.
Not when you're flying to Hawaii.
That is problematic, yes.
An Oregon family is grieving the loss of their dog who died while waiting for a flight to depart from Hawaii to Oregon. Their names are Gary and Angie... I'll take a stab at this.
Yeah, go for it.
Engligo?
Why not?
They are distraught over the death...
Well, they should be.
...of their 4-year-old French bulldog named Frank.
Let me ask this, too. On most domestic flights now, you can, especially a French bulldog, you can just bring the bulldog on the plane. See it all the time.
Yeah, you can. I think it's like $100.
Yeah. So what are you doing putting Frank underneath? I'm not saying that you're at fault, but...
I think they had a bunch of dogs. Apparently they had two dogs. I don't know. I love this quote, though. Gary says, he was such a good dog. He really was. He wasn't the smartest dog. Mm. And then Angie chimed in, smiling, and said, yeah, he was not smart. He wasn't smart at all.
Mm. That's...
Look at them just...
Why are you taking shots at Frank? I don't like that. I don't like that one bit. Let me just say, for the record, I'm not really liking the vibe of this family right now.
Well, Gary and Angie had moved out of their home in Hawaii. They were headed to the airport in Honolulu to move back to Oregon. So Gary grew up here. They were moving to southern Oregon. So they loaded up their belongings, grabbed a car, headed to the airport. They had Frank, Frank's sister Charlie, and Fawn, who's a 15-year-old Beagle Chihuahua mix,
yeah,
to take on the plane with them. They are claiming that Hawaii is just not dog-friendly. Because they said they asked to take their dogs out of their carriers and they were denied. And Angie said, Hawaii is not dog friendly. You're not allowed to have them out of the carrier at all in the airport except in the pet relief area.
I don't know, man. This is a little weird. You can't have your dog out. I don't. Every airport I've ever been, I've seen dogs out. What, are they going to arrest you for having your dog out of the carrier? No.
It says Honolulu's airport is a mix of indoor and outdoor spaces, but even in the outdoor spaces, which are within the secure area, they say they were denied. We were just sitting at the gate waiting for a flight. Frank is panting, and we just kept asking the crew at the desk if we could take him out, and they kept saying no.
Can I offer a suggestion? Take the dog out.
Well, they did.
Yeah. What do you...
He says, after we took them out to go to the bathroom, we broke the rules and we just kept them out.
Yeah.
We kept them in the shade. We gave them water. We tried to cool them off. We gave them water, and we were out for about 40 minutes. But then the dogs, you know, they have to stay in the carrier during taxi, takeoff, and landing.
Mm-hmm.
And Frankie...
So they were with... the
Frankie bit it.
The dog was carrier with them?
I think that the dogs were on the plane.
Dude. That's...
Yeah. The dog was on the plane. They were seated on the plane because you can, like you said, you can get those little carriers and put them under your seat.
No, this doesn't.
They said they unzip... So he's still panting. They unzip him a little bit. They were taking turns waving the safety pamphlet in order to try and cool him off. They asked if they could take him out of their carrier again. They said no. Alaska requires dogs stay in the carrier during taxi, takeoff, and landing. They then asked for ice. And when it finally came, they said Frank had stopped breathing.
Boy, I don't know, man. This all seems a little... You know me. There's two sides to every story. This seems... I assume that you were talking about the under the airplane, something like that.
Me too.
The dog died in your hands. I mean, come on.
Well, they're saying...
Take the dog out and be like, you know what? You can deal with me later. The dog's dying. I'm not going to keep... I'm not going to let my dog overheat to death while it sits on my lap. What are we doing?
Well, the other two dogs, I guess for the next 5.5 hours, you know, because they're flying to Oregon from Hawaii, they sat in their seats holding their other two dogs.
Well, Frank's
crying.
Dead?
Yeah, Frank's just laying there dead.
Dude, something else happened. This just doesn't... 2 and 2 ain't adding up to Frank here. Something's up. So you're telling me that you went to the airline. You're like, dude, my dog's died. And they're like, I don't care. Keep him in the carrier.
Well, I would say that if a dog is panting,
that
doesn't necessarily mean it's dying.
No.
You know, so they don't really know that the dog's
dying. But there
is
a difference. Like, I have a big dog that has a massive winter coat. And I know when you take him out and it's hot. Like when he gets overheated, you can tell when a dog's overheating.
Yeah, for sure.
Like there's times where I try to walk him early in the morning, and there's times where, you know, we're kind of going 50-50, like, it's a little too hot. And I bring him back inside after being, you know, for walking for a little bit, and he is just out. And you pour water on him. I'll take him outside. I'll spray him down. I lay him on the AC vent. You know when your dog's overheating. I'm sorry, you just do. The dog isn't just like, you're like, oh, I think Frank's okay, and then he's dead. This is weird. There's no excuse for your dog dying in your lap unless the dog had like complications and other health problems that are beyond
maybe
control.
It would have died anyway.
Yeah.
This one, there's a Vancouver Ford text line text that says, I worked at the airport. I would see people let a dog out of its kennel. It was running around on the runway while employees were trying to shoot it.
Whoa.
So landing gear would not hit it.
Jeez Louise. Shoot.
Yeah, out on the runway, you can't.
Well, that may be one thing, but. You know, again, if my dog's dying, it's not staying in the carrier because the lady is telling me that I have to keep it in. Huh? And again, how hot is the airplane? Like, what?
Yeah, it's temperature controlled. I don't really get it.
It's not 95 in there. I mean, I know that I've been on airplanes, so I'm like, it's a little warmer than others, but it's, you know, it's not a broiler in there.
Yeah, I just don't really feel
like... We're not making whoppers.
I don't really feel like this is the airline's fault.
No,
I know Gary and Angie are trying to... Well, I don't think anything's up. I think the dog just died. It's not the airline's fault that the dog died. It sounds like before they boarded the plane, they took it out. He said they got it water. They sat around for 40 minutes in the shade. That's the best you can do.
Yeah.
There's no one's fault here. The dog just died.
It just be... Do we know how old Frank is?
4.
Could the dog have gotten scared, like, because of everything?
Yeah,
and then,
could
like,
have panicked.
Had a panic attack?
It's possible. Or it just died of something else.
Yeah.
What are they going to do, an autopsy?
Yeah, this is weird.
I mean, the dog could have just, you know, could have freaked out.
He just put water in the... I don't know. This is... I got questions. Or as you said, you know, sometimes just S happens, man.
That's in the news.
Hell of a way to end in the news.
Dead dog. Oh, you want other dead news? Real quick.
I like dogs. I don't want dogs to die.
Well, Peter Courtney was not a dog.
Oh.
He was a human being.
Okay. I don't want him to die either.
He is Oregon's longest serving state legislator.
Yeah.
He has died at the age of 81.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
he had the cancer.
Just not a cancer, the cancer.
He retired last year, but he had been in the Oregon legislature for 800 years.
38 years as an Oregon lawmaker.
Yeah.
It's a long time.
Rest
he was steadfast, scrappy, and compassionate.
That's right. He was 81. That's in the news. July 16, 2024. We go Hot 5 at 5 next. I have more death. I'm just disseminating death news.
Great.
Right and left here. We've got, what else we got? An explanation on the anthem for the Home
there
Run Derby.
There have been a variety of proposals.
Oops, that was a misfire. The Home Run Derby anthem singer is out.
We knew something had to be. Again, stories.
She's explained.
Stories weren't adding up.
And Caleb Williams, did he sign? All next on The Fan. That story next. It is 4:43 on The Fan.
Farms Golf Club.
On 1080 The Fan.
I just had a Tootsie Roll for the first time in a long time. How do you feel about that?
Every now and then, like, we've got a bag of the worst candy. I don't know who's in charge of the candy budget, but I don't even know where you buy that candy. But someone bought an entire bowl of tiny Tootsie Rolls and then non-branded, just generic suckers.
Yeah.
Like, I honestly don't know where you would go to buy that candy. Dollar Tree? Or
the only thing worse is that bowl of mints in Ryan Cooley's office.
Yeah.
He buys those little mints that are...
just white.
They're just white with a hole in the middle.
Yep. Again, non-branded.
Like, lifesavers.
They're not lifesavers.
I don't know. They're the off...
They're the most generic, awful things ever.
It's like when you show up at like your grandma's house and she has a bowl of like the strawberry candies or like the random butterscotch. And you're like, I don't even know, like... Is that a Winco thing?
See, I like those butterscotches.
You're like, wait, whoa.
Yeah, take it easy on the butterscotch.
Grandpa Gary Ortner used to hide it like you would if you were going to give money to like a waiter so you can get a better spot in the restaurant. He used to hide the butterscotches so he'd shake your hand and give you the Werther's.
Now, Werther's is not a butterscotch. That's what? A Werther's original. You're not, and we're talking about the bastard, non-branded, just... Again, it's weird that there's no branding. It's just we all know what we're. It's just like that.
It's just
weird
in a yellow wrapper.
Yellow wrapper, it's just butterscotch.
Well, anyway, I enjoyed the Tootsie Roll. Huh? I hadn't had one in a long time.
Yeah, I don't need. You know, you don't really encounter the Tootsie Roll very often.
No. This is in the news, July 16, 2024. Would you trust your dog at the airport?
Having seen and worked at an airport myself, that would be an emergency, have no other option. I'm not putting my dog on an airport.
Well, if you are flying, so these people, this is an Oregon family, and they were moving.
Yeah.
And so I think they kind of had to fly their dog.
Well, you can always drive it.
Not when you're flying to Hawaii.
That is problematic, yes.
An Oregon family is grieving the loss of their dog who died while waiting for a flight to depart from Hawaii to Oregon. Their names are Gary and Angie... I'll take a stab at this.
Yeah, go for it.
Engligo?
Why not?
They are distraught over the death...
Well, they should be.
...of their 4-year-old French bulldog named Frank.
Let me ask this, too. On most domestic flights now, you can... Especially a French bulldog, you can just bring the bulldog on the plane. See it all the time.
Yeah, you can. I think it's like $100.
Yeah. So what are you doing putting Frank underneath? I'm not saying that you're at fault, but...
I think they had a bunch of dogs. Apparently they had... Maybe they had two dogs? I don't know. I love this quote, though. Gary says, he was such a good dog. He really was. He wasn't the smartest dog. Mm. And then Angie chimed in, smiling, and said, yeah, he was not smart. He wasn't smart at all.
Mm.
Look at them just...
Why are you taking shots at Frank? I don't like that. I don't like that one bit. Let me just say for the record, I'm not really liking the vibe of this family right now.
Well, Gary and Angie had moved out of their home in Hawaii. They were headed to the airport in Honolulu to move back to Oregon. So Gary grew up here. They were moving to southern Oregon. So they loaded up their belongings, grabbed a car, headed to the airport. They had Frank, Frank's sister Charlie, and Fawn, who's a 15-year-old Beagle Chihuahua mix, to take on the plane with them. They are claiming that Hawaii is just not dog-friendly. Because they said they asked to take their dogs out of their carriers and they were denied. And Angie said, Hawaii is not dog friendly. You're not allowed to have them out of the carrier at all in the airport except in the pet relief area.
I don't know, man. This is a little weird. You can't have your dog out. Every airport I've ever been, I've seen dogs out. What, are they going to arrest you for having your dog out of the carrier? No.
It says Honolulu's airport is a mix of indoor and outdoor spaces, but even in the outdoor spaces, which are within the secure area, they say they were denied. We were just sitting at the gate waiting for a flight. Frank is panting, and we just kept asking the crew at the desk if we could take him out, and they kept saying no.
Can I offer a suggestion? Take the dog out.
Well, they did.
Yeah. What do you...
He says, after we took them out to go to the bathroom, we broke the rules and we just kept them out.
Yeah.
We kept them in the shade. We gave them water. We tried to cool them off. We gave them water and we were out for about 40 minutes. But then the dogs, you know, they have to stay in the carrier during taxi, takeoff, and landing. Mm-hmm. And Frankie...
So they were with...
Frankie bit it.
The dog was carrier with them?
I think that the dogs were on the plane.
Dude. That's...
Yeah. The dog was on the plane. They were seated on the plane because you can get those little carriers and put them under your seat.
No, this doesn't.
They said they unzip... So he's still panting. They unzip him a little bit. They were taking turns waving the safety pamphlet in order to try and cool him off. They asked if they could take him out of their carrier again. They said no. Alaska requires dogs stay in the carrier during taxi, takeoff, and landing. They then asked for ice. And when it finally came, they said Frank had stopped breathing.
Boy, I don't know, man. This all seems a little... You know me. There's two sides to every story. This seems... I assume that you were talking about the under the airplane, something like that.
Me too.
The dog died in your hands. I mean, come on.
Well, they're saying...
Take the dog out and be like, you know what? You can deal with me later. The dog's dying. I'm not going to let my dog overheat to death while it sits on my lap. What are we doing?
Well, the other two dogs, I guess for the next 5.5 hours, you know, because they're flying to Oregon from Hawaii, they sat in their seats holding their other two dogs.
Well, Frank's
crying.
Dead?
Yeah, Frank's just laying there dead.
Dude, something else happened. This just doesn't... 2 and 2 ain't adding up to Frank here. Something's up. So you're telling me that you went to the airline. You're like, dude, my dog's died. And they're like, I don't care. Keep him in the carrier.
Well, I would say that if a dog is panting,
yeah,
that doesn't necessarily mean it's dying.
No.
You know, so they don't really know that the dog's
dying. But there
is
a difference. Like, I have a big dog that is has a massive winter coat. And I know when you take him out and it's hot, like when he gets overheated, you can tell when a dog's overheating.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, there's times where I try to walk him early in the morning, and there's times where, you know, we're kind of going 50-50, like, ah, it's a little too hot. And I bring him back inside after being, you know, for walking for a little bit, and he is just out. And you pour water on him, I'll take him outside, I'll spray him down, I lay him on the AC vent. You know when your dog's overheating. I'm sorry, you just do. The dog isn't just like, you're like, oh, I think Frank's okay, and then he's dead. This is weird. There's no excuse for your dog dying in your lap unless the dog had like complications and other health problems that are beyond
your control.
It
would have died anyway.
Yeah.
This one, there's a Vancouver Ford text line text that says, I worked at the airport. I would see people let a dog out of its kennel. It was running around on the runway while employees were trying to shoot it.
Oh.
So landing gear would not hit it.
Jeez Louise. Shoot.
Yeah, out on the runway, you can't.
Well, that may be one thing, but. You know, again, if my dog's dying, it's not staying in the carrier because the lady is telling me that I have to keep it in. And again, how hot is the airplane? Like, what?
Yeah, it's temperature controlled. I don't really get it.
It's not 95 in there. I mean, I know that I've been on airplanes, so I'm like, it's a little warmer than others, but it's... it's not a broiler in there.
Yeah, I just don't really feel
like... We're not making Whoppers.
I don't really feel like this is the airline's fault.
No,
I know Gary and Angie are trying to... Well, I don't think anything's up. I think the dog just died. It's not the airline's fault that the dog died. It sounds like before they boarded the plane, they took it out. He said they got it water. They sat around for 40 minutes in the shade. That's the best you can do.
There's
no one's fault here. The dog just died.
It just be. Do we know how old Frank is?
4.
Could the dog have gotten scared, like, because of everything?
And yeah, he could have
had a panic attack.
It's possible. Or it just died of something else.
Yeah.
What are they going to do, an autopsy?
Yeah, this is weird.
I mean, the dog could have just, you know, could have freaked out.
He just put water in the... I don't know. This is, I got questions. Or as you said, you know, sometimes just S happens, man.
That's in the news.
Hell of a way to end in the news.
Dead dog. Oh, you want another dead news? Real quick.
I like dogs. I don't want dogs to die.
Well, Peter Courtney was not a dog.
Oh.
He was a human being.
Okay. I don't want him to die either.
He is Oregon's longest serving state legislator.
Yeah.
He has died at the age of 81.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
he had the cancer.
Just not a cancer, the cancer.
He retired last year, but he had been in the Oregon legislature for 800 years.
38 years as an Oregon lawmaker.
Yeah.
It's a long time.
Rest
he was peace. Steadfast, scrappy, and compassionate.
That's right. He was 81. That's in the news. July 16, 2024. We go Hot 5 at 5 next. I have more death. I'm just disseminating death news.
Great.
Right and left here. We've got, what else we got? An explanation on the anthem for the Home Run Derby.
There have been a variety of proposals.
Oops, that was a misfire. The Home Run Derby anthem singer is out.
We knew something had to be. Again,
she's explained.
Stories weren't adding up.
And Caleb Williams, did he sign? All next on The Fan.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.